Your reasons for listening to this show, well, those are your own. But just keep in mind that the views, information, or opinions expressed on the Tuttle Daily Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Yeah, it's called free speech, people.
Nobody's forcing you to listen.
Get ready for your daily dose of Tuttle.
The all-time greatest intern slash producer we've ever had, of course, Tuttle. Tuttle in Florida.
From the Hobo Fish Camp, it's the Tuttle Daily Podcast.
No wonder nobody likes you, Tuttle. Everything's a goddamn debate.
I have not pulled that drop yet from the rocket launch guy. I'm going to do that over the weekend. I'm going to add that, definitely. Thank you for the reminder, Nedley Mandingo. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a Friday edition of the Tuttle Daily Podcast. Give me a call here, 407-270-3044. Or you can email me, tuttle@gmail.com. That's Tuttle with two D's, T-U-D-D-L-E @gmail.com. Coming up at 7:30, I got a great interview that I'm really looking forward to. Shel Silversmith. He's Navajo he is Navajo. A little bit about Shel Silversmith, my educational background. I have a BA in Family and Human Development from the University of Utah. My ethnicity is Navajo, and I speak Spanish and Navajo. I really think the Indian culture really got the shaft by the United States. Thank you, Fish on Jay, coming in with 11. Guys, thank you. Fish on Jay coming in. $11 on the super chat. Nedley Mandingo coming in with $20. Fish on Jay, Nedley Mandingo just big timed you. He did. He was like, you know what? I'll see your $10.99 and I'll raise it by $10. I'm so grateful for everything. It's going to be a fun show tonight. I wanted to ask you, so I left this one button undone. Did I leave too many buttons undone? Seriously, does it look better buttoned up like this? Or like, should I show a little bit of the chest a little bit? What do you guys think? And I got to get some better lighting. I have to, and I'm going to. It's not like I can't afford it anymore. I'm kind of becoming a little bit of a baller with this new job. Like, I don't even know what to do with all the money I'm making and stuff. Thanks to Vulture and everything. Before the start of the show, I got sucked into a movie. And does the audio sound fine? I didn't even get Vulture to give me a... I didn't even get Vulture to give me a Charlie Lima on this. Am I Charlie Lima on the deal, guys? Seriously. How do I even sound? I got to go listen to this now.
Does the audio sound
fine? Yeah, it is. It sounds good. All right, good. So before the show, I got sucked into a movie, and I hate when AMC does this. AMC plays some really good movies. But when they edit the movies, it just loses. It loses every bit of the meaning. But The Breakfast Club was on AMC, and they were editing the hell out of it. That movie was ahead of its time. Like, it dealt with all the things that the Gen X, Generation X dealt with, millennials, Generation Y, Z, X, whatever it may be. And that movie, I did not realize, they did that movie on a budget of $1 million. And I can see why. I could see why, because It was one of those things where it was just shot on a very simple set, $1 million, and that movie in the 80s grossed $60 million. That is mind-blowing. And then when I went back and looked at some of the movies that John Hughes did, this guy wrote nothing. He wrote and directed nothing but hits. National Lampoon's Vacation, Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom, 16 Candles, Weird Science. Weird Science was one of the first movies where I was like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh yeah, they're sexualizing women, they're building their perfect woman and stuff. Who was the chick? What was the, I cannot remember the chick in Weird Science. Kelly motherfucking LeBrock. I forgot Robert Downey Jr. was in Weird Science. But John Hughes, this guy had a lot of hits. Here, National Lampoon's Vacation, Mr. Mom, 16 Candles, Weird Science, The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful Life, or Some Kind of Wonderful, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, Uncle Buck, and Home Alone. Like, I'm not saying that Home Alone was his best written movie or, you know, directed movie, but Home Alone had to be the biggest financial success that John Hughes had. And if I'm going out on a limb here, I would have to say, Bill Paxton was Chet. I totally forgot. And, you know, like, I'm usually good at keeping up with celebrity deaths. I miss Bill Paxton's death. I'm not saying like it's, oh, I'm celebrating somebody dying, but that one slipped right by me. And Cowhead Stole Your Radio Career. Yeah. I gotta agree with you. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy and Steve Martin. You can't do much better than that movie. Seriously. And it just pissed me off that, and listen to this, guys. This movie came out at November 10th of 1990. It had a budget of $18 million. This movie grossed $476 million. That, for 1990, that is absolutely crazy. The Narcissist says he did 3 o'clock High. And I've seen that movie. Did he really do 3 o'clock High? Because, I mean, this guy has written nothing but than hits. Like, that's all he's written is hits. He did Mr. Mom, National Lampoon's Vacation, 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club. He even did European. He did all the vacation movies. Pretty in Pink, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Some Kind of Wonderful. planes, trains, and automobiles. Okay. The great outdoors. The Great Outdoors is such an underrated movie with John Candy. That scene where he eats the old 96er, I think. And he thinks he's done, and there's nothing but, like, fat and gristle left. And they tell him, oh, you're not done yet. You're not done. Yeah, he did. Holy crap. Cowhead Stole Your Radio Career writes, a lot of people don't know this, but there was a 3-hour. There really what? I have not seen this. A lot of people don't know this, but there is a 3-hour plane, trains, automobile version that was released to a screening audience and then cut down to an hour and a half. I have to see this. I can't see that fast enough. That, listen, when you get John Candy and Steve Martin in a film, like, there's nothing, that is going to be a recipe for success. Man, and I know, like, a lot of people already know this, but Uncle Buck, John Candy as well, too. What else did he do? Oh, Dutch was Curly Sue. Dutch was a very underrated movie. Had Ed O'Neill. So great. Home Alone. He did all the Home Alone movies. And then he started doing a lot of just like, all right, I just want to make money. I don't give a fuck what I'm doing. He did Home Alone 3, Flubber, 101 Dalmatians, Miracle on 34th Street, Baby's Day Out. So, yeah. Netley Mandingo says Home Alone 5 was the best. But am I the only one that thinks this? And I'm not the type of person that needs the cursing or raunch. I don't. But I think that it's absolutely disrespectful how, when it's on cable, I've never understood this. Why do these cable channels edit the hell out of these movies? And it just, some of the edits that they do, because what they'll do is they'll take other words that the actors have said in that movie to replace the edits. And I would rather them just like not bleep out, but just silence the word. Because some of the words that they choose are absolute, it just does not fit at all. And a lot of it loses a lot of meaning. Like Judd Nelson in The Breakfast Club, where he is describing what his father did to him, pitting the cigars out on his arm because he spilt paint in the garage and stuff. It really does lose a lot of meaning. It does. And it is cable network TV. You're not going to get fined because you got to pay for it. So you're not going to get fined for it. So why are you editing these movies now? especially a classic like The Breakfast Club. And I also think another person that does not get enough credit is Anthony Michael Hall. I mean, he played the nerd character in pretty much all of them. He played the nerd character in every single one of those flicks. He was also in another movie with Robert Downey Jr., Johnny B. Good. He was also in 16 Candles. And am I the only one? I mean, Molly Ringwald is not, like, has not held up that great, but come on. She was older in the 80s, starring in movies and stuff. But Pretty in Pink. She was in all those movies. So, coming up here in about 15 minutes, got an interview that I'm really, really looking forward to. Shel Silversmith is going to be joining me at 7:30. I don't know what you guys thought of the interview I did with Jordan Adler last night. I went back and listened to it. Oh, you guys are getting a little bit of a delay? Is my voice not matching up with what my lips are saying? Because I will log off and get back on, because I'm seeing a little bit of a delay as well, too. As I'm looking at it, it does not seem like it's matching up exactly with what I'm trying to do. Please, would love your feedback if you could let me know. Okay, all right. Well, see, because I'm seeing that as well, too. And I got to, all right, give me 1 second, guys. I'm going to log off, log back on. I'll be back in just a few seconds. All right, so I know what I did. I'm still logged on to the Wi-Fi on my phone. So that's probably what ended up happening. Ugh. Whatever. Boom, boom, boom. All right, I'm back. No, you know what I didn't do? I didn't log off of, that's the other thing. I sometimes have to log off. Is it any better? Please let me know. Because if it isn't, I don't know what else to do. Yeah, it is actually off. Hold on, watch this. Hold on. Yeah, it's off by like a half second. Hold on, ready? Yeah, it's off by half second. Dude, that is so freaky. Hold on. All right, it seems like it's catching up. I don't know. Anyways, with my mental health and everything, I have not been, I've never really been a hypochondriac. But I saw a news story today on local news talking about long-haul COVID. And I really do think that I am suffering from long-haul COVID. Because, I mean, I did not know what's been wrong with me. Like, I don't feel right. I don't feel good until like 11, hell, even noon on some days. I get headaches. My digestion is way off whack, and I don't want to get into and be too descriptive, but it's either really, really hard or really, really loose. if you know what I'm saying, when it comes to my digestion. I've been working out. I think I'm in the best shape of my life, but I'm always fatigued, insomnia. And I know that I should not, like, go online. The worst thing you can do is go online and Google symptoms and stuff. But now I'm in my own head. And then I was reading about this long-haul COVID and everything. Is that a lot of the professionals are saying that, oh, you might as well just knock 10 years off of your life expectancy. And now I'm freaking out. Like, now you thought I wasn't getting sleep. Forget about it. I'm not fucking sleeping tonight because I'm going to be thinking, oh, I knocked just because I went to a goddamn University of Florida football game at Raymond James in Tampa, that now I got long haul COVID. Like, seriously. You know, like, whenever I was going from my divorce in 2014 up until the end of 2019, when I stopped drinking and everything, I didn't have any health problems. I didn't have any health problems at all, because you want to know why? I think I basically pickled my insides with so much booze, drugs, and whatever it may be at that time that, well, guess what? Cancer didn't want to be there. Any virus didn't want to be there, because I had poisoned my body to the point where virus was like, yeah, man, we're good. Virus were like, we're good. We're going to just back out of the door slowly. We want no part of your insides. And ever since that, I have started working out. Natalie, it would be shocking. It's shocking how much that I drink. The bad thing was that I was drinking the cheapest rot gut whiskey. I would almost buy a handle every single day of Rich and Rare. And you guys all know how big a handle is. That shit was it was $10. And that bottle would be gone every day. Every day. It would be gone. Because I would drink myself to sleep. I would finish that bottle right before I went to sleep, which is the worst thing you could ever do. And then I would lay down. And some mornings when I would wake up to get ready for the show, my esophagus, my throat was on fire. I had the worst heartburn that you could ever imagine. And on top of that, I was taking that goddamn Zantac. I was taking Zantac, and guess what? Zantac, there's a big lawsuit against Zantac right now because, oh yeah, there's some type of carcinogen that was in Zantac. So on top of me absolutely destroying my digestive system and the lining of my stomach and my throat, you know, the leading cause of esophagus cancer is from heartburn. Because I would drink that shit like 5 minutes until I would go to sleep. And then I would lay down. And all that stuff would just go up in my throat. Man, it's crazy. Like, I had absolutely no like regard for my body, for the drugs and alcohol that I was putting in it. Nedley, you're absolutely right. I didn't get hangovers. Because usually I started drinking by 7 a.m. the next morning on Bubba's show. And I'm not in any way trying to say that Bubba like caused my alcoholism. I'll tell you the first thing I would do. Because I would set up the volcano in the morning. I'm not going to go into detail. If you know what a volcano is. First thing I would do in the morning was the absolute best cure for a hangover was doing a bag of straight fire-ass weed smoke out of a balloon. And I was good to go. And then I was just like, all right, cool. Where's the alcohol? I'm ready to drink. And that's all I was doing. I was self-medicating, people. I was self-medicating because I was so fucking miserable. Even though I was doing what I loved for a living, I was miserable. I'd just gotten divorced. I ruined my marriage. It was bad. It was bad, people. And I just stayed in a constant state of just being fucked up. I really don't know. I really do not know how I'm still alive to this day. Because I did. I tried to end it. I tried to end it. And if it wasn't for some shitty ass white trash, redneck construction and stuff, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. I wouldn't. And I'm glad to get a second chance, but now I got long haul COVID. So What good did that mean to quit drinking and stuff? It's you know what? You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Jolly Gator, drinking 2 gallons to a gallon and a half in the daytime, you can drink all day. Yeah. Nelly Mandingo writes, I need to take a page off of your book and slow it down, bro. See, but that's the thing about it. I appreciate that, Fish on J. Fish on J knows a lot more about what happened and everything, but I'm not gonna like throw anybody under the bus or anything, but you know, Fish on J writes, Pat, you didn't ruin your marriage. Nelly Mandingo, like, I wish that I could drink responsibly, but I can't. I have such an addictive personality. I just can't do it. Like, even with working out, me trying to live a healthy lifestyle, I can't even do that in moderation, people. I just can't even do that in moderation. Because I take everything to the extreme. I can't do anything half-assed. And I think maybe that's why I've always thought that I've been a great employee. I know a lot of you guys hear what you hear on the air and everything. And yes, I'm a fuck up. I am a fuck up. Oh, hold on. I got Shell Silversmith on. Hey, Shell. Hold on. Are you there? I don't hear you. No audio. Hold on. What's going on here? Hold on. Ba ba ba. What is going on here? Hold on. Can you hear me? I don't hear anything right now. Hold on. Let me run an experiment here real quick, okay? I want to make sure it's not on my end. I want to see if I can play this piece of audio, and if it plays. No, it doesn't. Oh yeah, I can play the audio, so you come up on that same channel shell. So I don't know what's going on. All right, take your time, no worries. I'm really, really looking forward to this interview because Shell, you know, I've dealt with a lot of the things that she's, no, I still can't hear you. Oh man, this is really bothering me. Hold on. Anyways, hey, Shell, do you want to try to log off and log back on and see if that maybe does anything? Because I haven't changed anything at all. You know, like I'm really, really, really getting absolutely upset. And here, let me try this again. Like I'm playing stuff off of the same channel. Yeah. Because, and you know what? When she logged on and everything, when she logged on, I heard it come up. So, I don't know. Okay, so my producer, Vulture, is saying, yeah. I gotta double check with all the problems that I've had with StreamYard and stuff. Can you reach out to her and make sure she does log back on? Because I actually prep for this interview and everything. I'm not saying that I don't take all my interviews seriously, but I, you know. I hope she does call back. All right, hold on. See, I just heard that. You guys heard that. Shell? No? Ugh. All right, so when you logged on, I heard it on the channel and everything. So what I'm trying to say is, like, when you logged on, so the channel you would be coming up on, I heard it. So that's how I knew you were coming on. Hey, Shell, can I give, how about we do this, okay? Can you write down the phone number that I have? All right, so can I give you the phone number and you can call in and we can do it all over the phone? All right, let me know when you're ready. You good? All right, 407. All right, 40. Yeah, 407-270-3044. Did you get that? All right, so 407-270-3044. Just call in. We can do the interview over the phone, okay? All right, thank you. All right, well, I mean, I still want to talk to her and stuff, so she can call in and I can just do it over the phone. So I'm just waiting for her to call back in. Shell Silversmith is going to be joining me right here in just a few seconds. Oh, here she is. Hey, Shell.
Hello, technical difficulties.
Oh, no,
I apologize
no.
for that.
No worries at all. No worries at all. Shell, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. This author thing is completely something new to me, but it's exciting, and I'm learning. I'm learning a lot.
How many interviews have you done? Like, am I like one of your first?
No, I've done a couple, and they're really short. And one was in the UK.
We're going long form. We're going long form here because I do have a lot of questions.
Oh, that's great. No, I feel like I haven't been able to express everything I've needed to express in short interviews. So this is great.
All right. So, Shell, before we get into the interview, I like to let my guests, because I could promote you, I could talk about what you have going on, but I like to let my guests have the floor. I like to let them tell people, my audience, about what they're doing, what they're promoting, and a little bit about themselves. So the floor is yours.
Okay. My name's Shell Silversmith. I have a bachelor's from the U of U. I've been a studio technician, a teacher, a social worker, and a basketball coach. And throughout my life, I've always written short stories. And I am actually currently writing a young adult fiction novel.
Kind of like Twilight? Kind of like Twilight, yeah. Maybe?
It's about a young girl in the adoption system whose foster parents don't love her. They're keeping her for the money. And she meets a couple in her dreams. See, dreams have always been fascinating to me. So she meets one night after they put her to bed with no food because she did something in their minds that was wrong. She meets Mama and Papa Marinelli, and they take care of her in her dreams because she's put to bed without any food, and they feed her. She gets a big bowl of spaghetti, a big root beer, and she's filled to the brim, and they talk to her in her dreams. And I don't know if you've ever had a lucid dream.
Can you give me the definition of a lucid dream?
A lucid dream is where you wake up in your dream and you can actually
remember,
wake up and do what you want. And it feels like this reality because you can feel things, you can taste things, you can smell things, and you're in control.
All right, so you're saying like during the dream you can be like, all right, I want to fly. I can make myself fly,
exactly.
Or whatever, right?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
That is very, very interesting, and I also like the topic manner. All right, before I get in, because I'm very ADHD and I'll be all over the place and stuff. How can people find you? Website, social media, and all that stuff.
Yes. They can find me on shellsilversmith.com, and that's an up and running. I believe it's in the basic stages right now, but, my tech person should have it finished within like 8 days, but you can still go there. And I'm also on social media. I'm on Twitter, Shell Silversmith.
I'm going to follow you now.
Yeah, and I'll follow you back. And then I'm on Instagram under Shell Silversmith. And I have a fan page under Facebook under Shell Silversmith. And if you go to the fan page and you like it, you can read my entire manuscript. It's there. And it's pretty polarizing, the comments I've gotten so far.
Well, what do you mean by that, polarizing?
Well, the beginning chapter starts out where I'm in a chapel in a Catholic church, and I'm about to go to confession.
Are you a religious person?
I grew up pretty religious. My mom took us to a Presbyterian church across town faithfully every Sunday since I was like 6 years old, and I was put in Bible school. We'd go to Bible school retreats, and I liked the camaraderie that a church held, and the people there were nice. And then my dad introduced me to the Catholic Church because he grew up Catholic, and that's a whole different story in itself.
I hate organized religion because I'm a victim of childhood trauma and stuff. The Catholic Church.
I heard your podcast.
But, like, you're Navajo, right? Like,
yes,
so, how do you get into Catholic religion and stuff, though? Like, I would love to hear, like, how did your father get introduced to Catholic religion and stuff, being Navajo and stuff?
That was a tragic story. My father was born in the Twin Lakes area of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And when he was 12 years old, him and his older brother and their mother were crossing a ditch to get to their house on the other side. And they weren't aware, but suddenly a rush of water came and it swept them away.
Flash flood, right?
Yes. And my dad was able to get to safety, and so was my uncle. But my grandmother, who I've never met, was taken away. And my uncle and my dad were the older children in the family. And there was actually my aunt was only an eight month old baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other children were younger, like I think 3, 5, 10. And then my dad and my uncle and my dad, two older sisters. So my grandfather needed a lot of help, and they happened to live near a Catholic church, and the nuns and the church stepped in and helped him raise them.
Yeah.
So that's how it happened. So from that point on, the children of my grandfather were
all Catholic.
They attended Catholic church. Yes. And my dad kind of, when he moved away from that area, he had to go to boarding school around the age of 15. And he went to Intermountain Boarding School in Brigham City, Utah. And when he went away, I think he did his own thing.
Did he ever talk about, like, was there any abuse or anything like that, you know, being raised Catholic and stuff? I mean, I I'm sorry if I'm prying and everything, but I'm curious.
No, I'm an open book. I wrote my life story. It's there for everybody. He appreciated the help from the nuns. But on the other side, he was more into the Navajo religion. He carried his medicine bag. He attended singing. He was more traditional.
Well, what part of the country was this? Where is the, you know, regional place that the Navajo Nation is, you know, thought of?
The Navajo Nation is the Four Corners area, which would be Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. Mm. And it's my grandmother happens to live in Arizona, and my dad's side of the family is from Window Rock. Window Rock would be the central part, I would think, of the Navajo Nation.
Is that on a reservation, or is that on
Window,
like,
Rock, Arizona? It's on the reservation. Yes, there's a portion of the reservation, like where my grandmother lives is Page, Arizona, and that's a city. But on the outskirts is the Lati'i area, and that's where the Navajo reservation is. So it's kind of designated a little outside of towns, of cities. So he grew up in New Mexico, and like I said, he was very traditional. And he didn't hang on. He maybe knew some Catholic prayers, but he was more into the Navajo religion of waking up, having his medicine bag, saying prayers, going to a medicine man, carrying around different herbs. So he was very traditional.
Did they ever get high on any, like, peyote or any of that other stuff?
My mom and dad aren't peyote people, but I do have relatives, like extended family, that are, and they take it really serious. There's a ceremony involved in all of that, and it's sacred. It's not recreationally used.
No, it's more of an eye-opening thing, right? Like trying to be closer to enlightenment type thing, per se.
From what I've heard, yes, getting messages and being able to communicate with guides and spirits, and like a kind of a path. But like I said, my father and mother never took that route. But my father, he wasn't really set of, you know, I have to go to the Catholic Church. So when he met my mother wasn't into Catholicism at all. She was Presbyterian. So when they met, my dad followed my mom to her church, and I was introduced to Catholic prayers, but it didn't really come into my life until later.
Yeah.
When I went to the Air Force, and that's when
thank you for your service. Thank you for your service.
Oh yes. Well, I ended up getting a medical discharge, but when I was at Lackland Air Force Base, I was really lost. I was an 18-year-old, and it was a scary time for me. So I went to the Catholic Church, and then that's where I had a sense of, okay, I'm home. And from that point on, I felt like I had a connection, but there's something that happened that really put me at odds with the church.
Yeah, what was that?
If you read in my first chapter, I'm at the chapel, and I'm waiting in confession, like fearfully in confession to what I'm about to confess. And I'm going to mention this. It's a time when, right now, is a time when we're a very polarized nation.
You don't have to say, we have never been more divided. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it blows me away, and I'm just like, how can we ever, like, accomplish anything right now with how divided we are?
Exactly. So I'm waiting in confession, and there's a father there. And I thought he was a father, is what I'll say, from South America. And he told me to confess. And so I came to confession. So I go into the booth, and I'm about to confess something that's been bothering me. And this is later on when I was about 27. And I go in there, and I tell him I had an abortion. And he freaks out on me. He slams a Bible from behind the curtain and starts yelling at me and saying, "You're going to hell. You're going to hell." And I thought, I didn't know if he was going to come after me or what was going to happen. I just thought I was going to say some Hail Marys or something. And so I was already broken.
That's some bullshit. You know what I would have said? Well, hey, you're not stopping your other fellow priests from raping and being pedophiles and stuff. None of those people went to jail, so don't judge me. That is so wrong. Like, I mean, right there, it only backs me up more of why I hate organized religion, especially the Catholic Church.
Well, I was already broken at this time, and I was just mortified that that had happened. And there were things happening in my life that I wanted to be free of. And I was just racking my brain as to why these things were happening to me. I had severe anxiety, severe depression. I was not confident at all. I was losing my mind. And for some reason, I thought that if I went to him and he, you know, forgave me, I can go on with my life. But that wasn't what happened. So I run to the car, and I thought he was going to chase after me. He didn't. And that's where my story starts.
Hold on, Chell. I'm sorry. Can I ask, I mean, if you feel comfortable, and I don't want to give away because I want people to read the book and everything, but why did you end up having an abortion? Was it over health reasons? You didn't think you were ready to be a mom?
Because I did write about this in the book.
Okay, I don't want to ruin it, but can you kind of, give us a little bit.
You know, it was the last thing as a woman that I wanted to do. I mean, your children are your heart and soul.
Doesn't matter. It's your choice. Like, you don't have to explain why you did it.
But I it wasn't something that I was like, oh, this is a way to get out of it. And you know, I took it seriously. I prayed on it. I was very distraught by it. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is my husband, who I ended up marrying later on, he was not ready to be a dad.
Yeah.
And he flat out told me, and it wasn't even nicely, he's like, I'm not going to be a dad.
So do you
I'm not ready.
Did you feel
and
pressured?
Like, yes.
You did?
And I didn't know how he was going to respond, but that was the last response that I thought he would have. I thought he would be a little open, or at least...
Was he military?
No, he wasn't in the military. But he had the response of no, no, no. So I knew I didn't have a choice if I was going to raise my child with a father. I knew it was going to be something I had to go out on my own and raise my child alone. And at that point, I was not financially stable and I was not in a place to raise a child by myself. And if you read the book more, you'll find out that I was a child of adoption.
If people want to find the book, where can they find the book at?
Well, it's going to be released on November 1st
mm-hmm.
on paperback, hardback, and the Audible book. So we have that coming out November 1st. But if you want a sneak peek of the unedited version, and I look at it...
Of course, you got to have unedited. You have to have unedited. Like, the story does not need to be edited at all. Like, I want the stone... cold, hard
reality. Well,
this reality.
Is for grammar errors, so that's what it's for. So
okay.
The heart of it's still in there, but the grammar errors are in there, so I cringe every time I see it. But you can go to Shel Silversmith on my Facebook page, and there's the copy there. It's under one of the posts, and it's so far, as far as I've been tracking, I think, 60 people have read it.
Hey,
and like I said, it's polarizing.
Shel, somebody asked, how many months pregnant were you when you had the procedure done?
I had found out at, I believe I was 6 weeks pregnant, so I had it done like right then.
Okay.
So 6 weeks.
And I apologize, but I always I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't like ask questions and stuff like this.
I understand.
Tommy Longo writes, the links on her personal website aren't working for me. Might want to let her know. I'd be interested in reading the book.
Try Instagram and...
I'm going to put all these links when I post this show, the audio version, and after I get done with the live stream and everything. I'm going to go back up and put all the links and everything so people can find
Instagram, it. Twitter, and the Facebook is a fan page.
Mm.
And you just have to like it, and it's on the post because people have been getting through it through the Facebook pages page.
Mm-hmm.
So you just put Shel Silversmith on the pages, and it should pop up there, and it's under a post.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna put all the links on the description when
Great.
We get done
and
with
then
this.
Shel Silversmith, and I will make
and that's
sure
Shell, not like Shell, like
Shell Silversmith, SilverSmith.
Shell, while we're talking about this topic that's going on in our country, did you hear about one of the first cases that the Supreme Court is going to hear up in October?
Tell me about it.
Okay, so the first case that because there's been some crimes and stuff that have been committed on reservations and stuff. And I'm not saying anything that's like organized, but just like murders and stuff like that. And the Supreme Court is actually going to hear about what the jurisdiction is when it comes to reservations and stuff. And
I've been reading up on that.
What I feel like that it's your land, because here in Tampa we have the Seminole Hard Rock Casino here in Tampa when I worked over in Tampa, and like the law enforcement, the sheriff's office, the Tampa police office could not go on to that property unless they were asked to buy that. And I wanted to get your feeling. Do you think that they should have any jurisdiction at all? Because I really don't think that they should.
Well, there's a running joke where my mom, the reservation at Lucie, they're like, if you're going to get hurt or die, you should probably do it in the city. Reason being is
government's going to take care of you.
It's a long response time. It really is. My grandmother rolled her truck. This is when she drove. She rolled her truck, and it took about 2 hours for anyone to get there. And we were there waiting for her. And it's just, it's so, the land is so far out. I mean, for just to get to my grandmother's land to where she was at from the town of Page was about 45 minutes. And if they're already on some other accident, you know, they're just going to have to wait. So the staffing isn't there. So the response time is slow. And it's a double-edged sword. You go missing, like, I'm sure you've heard
a lot
of
people go missing.
Women.
A lot of people go missing on the res, right? Or
I mean,
is that bad for me to say the res?
I say the res. We say the res.
Okay, all right. I just didn't want to, like, I didn't want to offend anybody.
And I think it's been working the system we've had in. I mean, when I went to the UU, we were told, you know, Roe versus Wade would not be overturned. And
you went to Utah, right?
This was a big movement for women's rights. And then here we are in 2022, and it's like, whoa, we're moving backwards. So my main concern is for the health and safety of young mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a colleague, and they said, did you know that the lawyers for the hospitals now, they're going to be advocating no matter what situation the mother's health is to save that baby, because they don't want the hospital to have liability.
Yeah.
So the mother's life is not going to be a priority at this time.
But,
and that just sickens me.
But what gets me is, like, even in the case of incest or rape, man, like, you know, it's not the kid's fault, but you can't tell me that somebody is not going to, every time they look at that kid, they're going to be like, you're the offspring of somebody that raped me, or you're the offspring of my brother or cousin or my father.
Yeah, exactly. That does happen. It happens a lot. And there's so many different elements that go into this. Like, you know, you can't tell me you're going to let somehow an 11-year-old get pregnant. You're not going to tell me that you're going to let her go through childbirth, are you?
No. I mean, this
if she doesn't want to, that to me is criminal.
Well,
it's going to happen.
You want to know what people say, life begins at conception. No. I can't find a single person. I know in my own personal experience, I don't remember everything, but I don't remember a damn thing before I was born. Matter of fact, I don't remember the first couple of years of me being born. You get what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Also, at the same time, a lot of people don't bring this up. Before Roe versus Wade was even became anything, like, we had the worst crime in the world here in the United States. And a lot of people want to say, oh, you're making this about a race. No, because guess what? There's a lot of white trash Caucasians like myself that are born and they go through trauma, they go through abuse, or they just get neglected and they just end up in the system. You do realize, like, after Roe versus Wade, 13 years later, the crime dropped in this country dramatically.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
And it's like, have you ever watched George Carlin at all? I mean, he brings up a great point. Like,
he's brilliant. He's a brilliant man.
He called this like 25 years before what we're going through right now. And talked about this and said, you know, the conservatives. And look, I don't support either side. I don't trust any of these politicians anymore. I really, really don't. But like he says, he's like, and, you know, once you're born, we don't want to give you food stamps. We don't want to give you Medicare, Medicaid. We don't want to feed you in schools or anything like that. But when you turn 18, you're important to us because we want to raise babies to become dead soldiers. Guy nailed it, in my opinion.
Oh, he nailed the other things, too. I was reading about him, and he must have had foresight.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of acid, cocaine, and marijuana as well, too. So that's probably why he was as well as he was. On the line with me right now is Shel Silversmith. She's an author. Once again, tell my audience how they can check out your content, how they can follow you on social media.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Shel Silversmith, and I'm also on Instagram. I pay most attention to my Instagram page, and that's Shel Silversmith also, at Shel Silversmith. And check out my podcasts on there. There are some interesting podcasts I think I have that some people might enjoy. It talks about my awakening experience and also tips for anxiety, because that was my main focus for writing Finding My Sacred.
What do you have anxiety about? What do you like? Because I have every anxiety you could ever think of.
Well, when I was going through, I was at one point agoraphobic. I was housebound for 3 years. I didn't leave my house, and that happened after a bad car accident.
Agoraphobic?
Yeah, I was, after the car accident, I became agoraphobic because I actually had a brain bleed that I didn't know about until like 3 days later, and the doctor's like, you had a brain bleed, but it's under control.
When was this?
And after that, that was in 2011.
Okay, I was about to say, if you were agoraphobic during the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, it's pretty convenient.
No. It was 2011, and I was confused and lost for about a three-year period. And I became so confused and so lost. And I would go out, like, not even to the corner, and my heart would start to race, and I would start to panic. And I thought that was going to be my life from now on, is to live in panic. Mm-hmm. And I researched and I prayed and I wrote a letter to the universe, and I pretty much said, please heal me or please take me, because I cannot wake up in a panic. I mean, from the moment I woke up, my heart was racing and I couldn't swallow.
Did you ever self-medicate at all?
Well, no, I didn't. But I did manage to go to the doctor, and they prescribed me Boostbar. And it was kind of like a little bit of a Band-Aid. But I was so desperate and so at my point of, I can't take this anymore. When one day I woke up the next morning, I picked up my phone off the charger. And it blew up in the back of my hand. The battery blew out from the back.
Wow.
And I believe I was somehow put in a heightened state of awareness. And for 3 days, I didn't have the need to eat or drink, or I was in bliss. And I was, felt like a connectedness to everything. And I was in this heightened state of awareness. And I was able to heal my body somehow. Something was speaking to me. And this is a whole nother topic in itself. It almost seemed alien related.
So do you believe in aliens?
Yeah, I do. I do. And my body was healed. And after that, you wouldn't believe what I decided to do with a healed body on, like, after this was done. I went to a big box store and stood in the back of the store because I'd never been able to do that without panicking. So I did that. I went to like 3 stores and went to the very back because I'd never been able to do that since it started happening. But
man,
yeah,
I
believe I was healed.
I got to tell you, panic attacks. I remember when I had my first panic attack.
Oh my goodness.
It felt like I was dying, even though like nobody knows what it feels like to die. But I mean,
you only do it one time. Yeah.
It's just this sense of impending doom, man. And I had it while out exercising, walking, and I don't know where I had it. I went into a Starbucks, sat down and I didn't even bother trying to order anything. I just went and sat down. And was like, I'm going to die here, like, in front of all these people. Like it was crazy.
Oh, I get it.
And panic attacks.
I get it.
Panic attacks are a weird thing because you get in your own head. The more and more you think about panic attacks, the worse it compounds itself. It really does.
Oh, yeah. And I found out that there were trigger thoughts that just led to an instant. My heart would be racing and I'd be sweating just from a thought. And I believe I trained my body to do that.
Yeah.
I trained my body to just go into panic mode and something was off. And luckily through the awakening, like I had a system reset.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I was given tools, and I write about that in the book.
What's your life like right now, though? Like, are you...
Right now, I am... It's
married, dating, doing, you know...
Okay, I am separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I am... I have a child who's going to be in his senior year in high school.
Wow.
And I'm in a good place because I have the tools to know how to deal with panic and anxiety, because that was just such a hindrance to me and even my career, because I could not.
Is that why
imagine.
You left the Air Force? Was that your medical leave because of the anxiety?
No,
and stuff?
I injured my foot.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. I injured my foot really bad. So that was why I had to leave. No, I didn't experience it until my father's death. And when my father was, he was my rock.
Mm-hmm.
And he really was, even over my mom. My mom, she was always scolding me, wanting me to do better. Where my dad was just, I love you, mm-hmm. no matter what. So after losing him.
Yeah, I just had the 1 year anniversary.
My rock was lost.
I had a 1 year anniversary of my dad, losing my dad.
That is difficult.
Yeah.
Losing a parent is difficult.
And I'm an only child, too. And I think only children, like, because I after my mom's gone, I don't have anybody. Like, I got divorced in 2014. And, you know, you start kind of putting pressure on yourself and everything because you feel like you're going to be alone and everything.
I understand that. I understand that immensely. Yeah. No, well, I talked to my therapist, and she said the reason why I believe that you're having such a hard time with his death is he gave you unconditional love,
mm-hmm.
and he was your rock and your stability.
Never
and
judged
after
you.
After he died, your rock was gone, your stability was gone. That's what put you into this mode of panic and being frightened.
Did he support you no matter what? Like, would he always, like, have your back? Like, could you have ever disappointed your father?
Oh, yeah. My dad always had my back. And he was, like I said, I really admired the spiritual essence of his nature. He was, if anyone who's met him,
they're like, he's so kind, so giving, and so loving. Yeah. And that was truly what he was. I mean, someone would come over and say, my sink's not working. And he would take his little tool bag over there and go fix it. And they try to give him money. And he's like, no, it'll come back to me.
But you would think, because, you know, like, people have this stereotype or image that a Navajo father would be, like, strict. Would be judgmental or whatever.
If you research the Navajos, you'll find out that we are a matriarchal tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my experience with my family, the women, they control the household.
Wow, they do. That's crazy.
They do. I know. And my mom did that, and my dad would take a seat back. And even my poor uncles, they're like more in the background, and my aunts, they're very strong. And my grandmother is 102 years old.
Wow. That's pretty
and
cool.
So you can see, yeah, the women are very strong. It doesn't mean that the men aren't as important, because, to be honest, the very most important people that have been in my life are my uncles, and they have all passed but one.
Mm.
But I learned so much from them, and their love and their
seems like
caring
the,
nature.
Seems like the Navajo men were smart. Like, I learned that, like, towards the end of my marriage. Like, you don't have to win arguments. You ain't got to win anything. Just kind of like, all right, cool. You're right. We're good.
That's how a lot of let my uncles in. Operate. Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
Okay.
Yeah. One of the last questions, I know this is way off topic and stuff, but what are your thoughts on a lot of these sports franchises changing their names, like the Redskins and the Indians and stuff? Do you think it's a good thing, or do you think people are blown out of proportion and stuff? I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Okay, my context is very different since I've had my awakening on how I look at life. And it's not necessarily an Anglo viewpoint or a Navajo viewpoint, or it's just the self viewpoint. And from that perspective, say you call me a savage.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, Rochelle, you're a savage. Now, if I take that in, and if I believe it, and if there's elements that I believe, it's going to hurt me.
Yeah.
But now, knowing my truth and my worth and who I am, you call me that, I know it's wrong. I know you're not right. I know you can't hurt me in that way.
Yeah. But do you think they're going overboard, or do you think it's a good thing? Like, I mean, you're saying it doesn't affect you, but overall, you know that it does affect some people, right?
I think that we've done this so long. I mean, like, someone put up the Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
How would, you know, I mean, would that be worrisome or troublesome to you?
Doesn't bother me. I call myself a Florida cracker. Like, you know, like I do. Like,
you're going to have various. I mean, everybody's going to respond different. I mean, yeah, to it. As far as my relatives, yeah, there are some that are like, I can't
offended.
Believe that they would say that. Yeah. And there are others who are like, you know, it is what it is. I don't control that. So I think it's an individual for me, in my experience.
Mm.
It depends on the individual. Of course, I don't like blatant racism. I mean,
yeah,
I saw that.
Who does?
Standing Rock. I mean, that was heartbreaking to watch and to realize, you know, we're defending the water, and there's three different, you know, they've got the city police in there, the National Guard, and you know, all these people descending upon that land, and that was where, and then they put some of the Native Americans in cages, and I'm like, okay,
yeah.
that is crazy, and you know, I watched by, and that happened. It really happened, and I'm like, I can't believe nobody's doing anything, and I just know I have this just by standing back and watching. Unless it really affects you and your family,
you don't care.
It's not going to. No, but yeah, nobody's going to care about it.
Is there any like hate between like different nations and stuff? I mean, it happens in every culture. Like it does. Do you see what I'm saying?
My son brought this up, and I know there were tribes that fought a long time ago, but there were more tribes I think that got along. And right now, I know there was, it's a land thing between the Navajo and the Hopi, but I have Hopi relatives, and from what I've seen, they get along.
Okay.
And I don't mind my Hopi neighbor, and I don't think they mind their Navajo neighbor, and unless it's a land dispute, which land disputes happen between Navajos, usually I think we get along.
Yeah, I mean it does happen. Like, I mean, trust me, the Caucasians, we look down, we'll be like, oh, that's, those people are trashy or whatever, and it happens in the African American community, you know, darker skin, lighter skin. It does happen. Like,
yeah.
Shell, I really enjoyed this interview. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well too.
I did, and I did listen to some of your other podcasts, and they were really interesting, and I applaud you for being open about your mental health and just being open as a man with his feelings. That's something that I applaud you for.
Shell, it's not easy. Like,
I don't think it is.
I'm not saying that, you know, anything bad about my parents or anything, but especially being a man in the South, where you're expected to be a certain way, and you tell people, oh, I'm depressed, I got anxiety, I got this, what do you got to be depressed about? Just, we put clothes on your back, you got a full stomach, you got, you know, all you got to do is go to school and do this and do that, you know?
I think until you've gone through it, you don't really know what the person's going through.
Mm-hmm. And
unless you, yeah.
And I've been open about it, but there's some stuff that I haven't talked about. Like, you know, stuff to the point that I didn't talk about because I knew that if I was open about it, and I'll just leave it at this, I didn't want my dad to spend the last years of his life in prison. And I'll leave it at that right there.
Oh, yes. I hear you.
Because my dad would have, if I would have talked about this stuff, my dad would have straight up just, it would have, and I hate even calling it murder. It just would have been retribution that was well deserved.
Yeah. No, I mean, and you've got to talk about this stuff, whether it be to the audience or to a therapist, because holding on to it festers.
I mean,
and I know that.
I talked about trying to kill myself like an hour and a half on a nationally syndicated radio show. So
I heard that podcast.
You know, I kind of was being selfish. I talked about it because I wanted to hold myself accountable. I wanted somebody to be able to be like, all right, Tuttle, we need to, like, look out for you. Because I wanted somebody to know about it in case I tried to do it again. But then I also talked about it because if there was one person out in the audience that I could help. Now, I had to spend 11 days, which felt like a month, in the hospital. Fucking sucked.
Now that was brave. I could have went to that point, but I was too afraid. I'm like, I'm just gonna get worse and I might die in there. But you know, writing this book has been healing. And I think opening up, and there are really embarrassing things about me in there. And but opening up and talking about these things, I get DMs, I get messages, or someone runs into me, they're like, you know what, I having really bad anxiety too, or I was adopted too. And it's just, it's nice to see that there are other people going through the struggle like you. But then also, you know, I want to be the example that you can get through it and that there are better days. And it's hard work. If you read the book, you'll know that I did a lot of work, a lot of self-improvement. And it just didn't happen overnight either.
Yeah.
But I'm in a lot better place, and I'm thankful because I get to talk to people like you and your audience and just share my experience, and hopefully we learn from each other.
All right, Shell, I really appreciated this interview. Like, if you ever want to have me on,
me
I'm trying to invite myself, but if you ever want to have me on, I would love to be on your podcast
sure.
as well. Tell my audience once again how they can check you out.
Okay, you go to Shell Silversmith on my Instagram, and I'll make sure I'll provide the links on Instagram. So look for me on Instagram and follow me, and hopefully we can connect.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Shell. I hope you have Twisted Movie
you
says
too.
Twisted Movie. Hold on. Twisted Movie says fantastic interview. So
thank you.
All right. Well, I'm gonna
you all have a blessed night.
All
thank
right.
you.
Hey Shell, you have a great night as well too. Bye.
I will. Okay,
all right. Bye. All right, guys, I'm gonna get out of here. Hope you guys have a great night. Hopefully you guys stay safe. And I will talk to you tomorrow.